CAM member and volunteer from downtown's West End, where I have collected over 100 signatures on a petition asking you to uphold the original ordinance.
Mary, could you slide the mic back just a little bit away from you?
Might be this thing here. Let me take this off.
Thank you.
Okay. Where I have, to uphold the original ordinances for the vacated Madison Street. The people who signed include many in wheelchairs, scooters, walkers, or using canes. Over half are from the nearby low-income housing in the West End that Ivan Gold talked about. A few lunch at Meals on Wheels, or they are students from PSU, or members of Portland Tenants United, or PDX Jimbies. They read or speak at least 7 different languages. Thanks, Google Translate. These people all want you to keep the current public right-of-way requirements between the two buildings of the Art Museum. They believe the most equitable solution to the museum's desire to have connectivity between its buildings is for PAM to build connections on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th floors. They believe it stretches credulity to believe that PAM will keep those doors open to people with pets after the first few dogs poop or puke on PAM's floors. It stretches credulity to believe that PAM will keep those doors open to cyclists after the first few bikes track in mud or debris. And it stretches credulity to believe that PAM will keep those doors open when snow and ice, was closed for 10 days in late 2016. Will PAM really send personnel to let those of us who can travel during such events come through with our yak tracks and micro spikes on our feet? Instead of creating a new super block between Southwest Park and Southwest 10th, I ask you to fix the one super block we currently have in the West End by exploring the creation of a Madison walkway between Southwest 11th and 12th. I submitted the attached proposal last April as well. Please give it your attention while we still have a chance to act on this property that has sat vacant and derelict since the Morris Marx House move on September 30th. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hello, my name is Mary Chemenko Hinckley. I moved, and thank you for hearing me. I moved here 20 years ago from the Bay Area, and in looking at Portland as a place to live, one of the big draws was the artistic community here. We have opera, the symphony, theaters, the Portland Art Museum, and I think in terms of a city and its relevance to a community, Portland has so much to offer its citizens, and having this building making the Portland Art Museum a more viable and more accessible institution, I think, is very important. I think the pavilion will not just be the Rothko Pavilion, but it will be the Portland Pavilion. It'll serve as a living room in our downtown. It's a meeting space for visitors, for groups. People have said that now people visiting the museum have to jockey for space in the entry, and I think that it makes the building more viable. My father, who was 98 this year, visited the Portland Art Museum over many years, and as he aged, first having difficulty walking with a cane, then a walker, then being in a wheelchair, each visit over the years to the Portland Art Museum became more and more of a challenge to finally just making the visits more difficult. So I think this passage, opening and connecting the buildings, will help other people with disabilities and with mobility issues. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Donald Jenkins. I decided to make my testimony today because I have been connected with the Portland Art Museum over 20 years. My first job was here in 1954, and much of my career was in this place and in the museum. And I thought maybe today to just talk a little bit about our history and how that connects with this block that now causes us so much problem. When I first came here, it was still a street, but a stub of a street. Cars parked on either side. And there, all you saw on the south side was the back rooms used by the school, which at that time was part of the museum. So when in 1970, when the new, when they tore down the old remains of the original school that had been there for the, and that was being used by the museum school, they added a feature. They had to lower the, I'm going to have to shorten this. Any rate, we ended up with a garden that people could look at but could not go in. And it was very attractive. And it meant, because of that decision that was made, they could stop and look at it, and there were no more cars there. But then, in 2005, when we acquired the... have ended up with the situation we have now. Now, I always thought this was a wonderful thing because it was... when you think of all the people who went into all of this development that the museum has gone through over these years, from that simple place where I joined about only 20 people to be the museum assistant and subsequently had my career there, I saw that museum grow, and it grew as a civic or a governmental entity, but as a gift to this museum that has grown, and the coming of this, being able to use this block between the buildings, has helped, but it needs to be improved, and that's what we're now talking about. Just think of this. 300,000 people visited this museum last year. There are 19,000 members pouring their time and their money in this venture. We need to be cognizant of that history, and that's my...
Very good. Thank you, sir. We appreciate that history. Thank
that
you for
really
telling us.
Could
Thank
I just answer the question that Commissioner Fish asked of Judith earlier? And one of the reasons we perhaps don't trust that the Art Museum would, in fact, abide by a new ordinance if they get a building there is that currently... they don't. They do close the plaza for private events. I haven't noticed that they've done it since last April, when more of us became aware of the ordinance. But many, many times I have complained that I was not able to get through there because of a private event. I've actually gone into the museum and asked to talk to the director. Of course, it's always on a weekend and the director is not there. But in any case, they do close it now for private events altogether.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony, all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Bryce Lilly, Deidre Hall, and Jackie Willingham. And they'll be followed by Elizabeth Thomas, Mawa Francis Lee, and Shirley Rockner.
Shall I start?
Please, yes, thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Jackie Willingham, and I am chair of the Board of Literary Arts, a nonprofit literary center located in downtown Portland. Professionally, I'm a part-time consultant, and prior to that, in 2015, I retired from my corporate career at Standard Insurance Company, which I'm mentioning because my job there was to oversee the payment of benefits and the provision of rehabilitation services to people with disabilities. I am pleased to advocate for the Rothko Pavilion for several reasons. The Portland Art Museum's master plan and the associated pavilion will greatly enhance access for people of all abilities and enable a broad range of experiences with art by providing 30,000 additional square feet of gallery space and more capacity for education and public programs. As a valued cultural partner, the museum has served as the central location for Wordstock, Portland's book festival, the last 3 years. Just a month ago, 10,000 Wordstock attendees appreciated access to the museum as well. Some 1,500 of those attendees were youth or children, many of whom visiting the museum for the very first time. The Rothko Pavilion will provide additional covered space for Wordstock as well as other community events. As one who has visited the museum numerous times, I know it is difficult as well as confusing for many to navigate between floors of the two existing buildings. The pavilion responds directly to the access and navigation challenges that museum attendees now experience. The Rothko Pavilion shows that the museum can stretch to meet community demands if the city provides it with the ability to realize its potential, while meeting the needs of citizens for a safe and attractive passageway. I commend the executive director and the staff of the museum for their willingness to engage with disability rights advocates and citizen representatives. The design for the Rothko building is a beautiful, necessary, and welcome addition to the Portland community as a public gathering space.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hello. I'm Bryce Lilly. I am the senior maintenance technician at the museum. They wanted to give me a raise, but I held out for a title. Although it is not part of my function, I've been, when we're short-staffed and janitorial, I volunteer and I do the outside rounds in the area that we're talking about in a little bit more. And I am just here to state that that is an uncivilized area. Somebody mentioned, didn't know how to say it, but they said poop and puke. So, and the poop and puke that I deal with isn't necessarily from dogs. And the dogs don't leave the hypodermic needles behind. This is just, I see the changes that the museum propose as a civilizing element to a questionable situation. And I'm quite frankly at where the rubber meets the road. I don't do it all the time, but in the last few months I've done it a couple dozen times. And it is not unusual to, find things as really unacceptable to anybody. And at the Elliott Towers, I have really good relationships with everyone there, and everyone is responsible for their dogs. But there's another element, and it is not from them, that we have to deal with.
Thank you. And I want to thank you for the work you do, and I want you to know that we're having separate conversations with some folks in the community around some of the livability issues in the neighborhood. So thank you for the hard work that you are doing.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Members of Council and Mayor, thank you for having me here today. My name is Deidre Hall, and I'm a commissioner on the City of Portland Commission on Disability. I'm speaking as a citizen today, like my other commission members today. I'm here to speak about the plans, of course, for the Rothko Pavilion as it relates to accessibility for all citizens of our beautiful city. It's crucial that the pavilion be kept open during the hours which are in alignment with the hours of the Portland streetcar. This will allow all citizens, including seniors and people with disabilities, the ability to continue to access public transportation, which is vital for achieving and maintaining independence in our daily lives. I'm excited to have an ongoing relationship with the museum to continue working on not just the physical access, but on programmatic access as well. This is a great opportunity to advocate for and see the benefits of universal design. I also want to just make a personal note. I know that a lot of people have testified today. Our preferred term is people with disabilities. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there since I have the microphone. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next three, please.
Are Elizabeth Thomas, Maiwa Francis Lee, and Shirley Rockner. And they'll be followed by Wilfred Mueller Crispin, Stephanie Parrish, and Charles Ryberg.
And for folks who are patiently sitting upstairs, thank you very much for doing that. We're starting to see some chairs open up. It looks like we have five or six down here. So if somebody's in a place where they can't see up there, we're starting to have some seats down here open. So thank you for those of you who are sitting upstairs today. We appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Thomas, and I haven't had any water for about 2.5 hours, so excuse my dry voice. First of all, I just wanted to mention someone had indicated that the museum was closed 10 days last year due to inclement weather. It may have been closed for 2.5 days to public entrance, but believe me, we always have staff protecting the art, watching all the control room. The museum will always be staffed, and I have no doubt that people with crampons, snowshoes, whatever, will be welcome through the museum. I appreciated what Bryce said as well about cleaning up the exterior of the buildings. Yeah, we're dealing with a lot of issues right now, so I just wanted to affirm those 2 points. The museum's front entrance, which was beautifully designed by Pietro Beluschi, was built in an era when people with mobility and disability issues were forgotten. Today, we still don't have a front entrance for those people. If you're in a wheelchair, you got to find the ramp. If you're in a walker, you've got to find the ramp. And you've got to go up that side entrance that Doris Ennis talked about so eloquently. We probably need to do a little better job on watching for people tapping on our windows. People talked a lot about the wayfinding, so I won't go into that part of my talk. But I did say, or would like to say, as you've heard, the comprehensive plan for the pavilion, which includes open and clearly visible linear connections on every floor, will really remedy a lot of the wayfinding issues. But it's that ground floor main entrance that will be for everyone that is so important. People shouldn't have to think that they have to go in the side door or the back door to get into the museum. People who come from 10th Avenue shouldn't have to think that they got to find their way to the front of the museum. This pavilion front ground entrance will feel open for everyone, and we don't know what the doors will look like yet. There's a lot of doors that are still, doors are under design all the time. I seriously cannot envision a door with a handle. I see electric doors. I see air doors. So I think that those issues, that those will be addressed and looked at in the design process. So please disregard those concerns. Finally, the pavilion will also be a welcome addition to the South Park blocks and the surrounding neighborhood streets, which are becoming less hospitable every year. I heard from many people that the only time they feel comfortable spending leisure time in the park blocks between the museum and the other side of the street is when the farmers market is open. A vibrant new structure can be inviting, exciting, and bustling with activity that will spill out into the park and beyond. It will be a shot in the arm for this weary area. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz.
I have some questions since you talked about wayfinding and flow. What will the two front doors currently on the park blocks remain there, or are they envisioned to go and just have the one?
As I understand, the park block, the Pietro Beluschi main entrance, the doors will remain, but they'll cease to be the front entry because they'll plant that won't be the lobby anymore. The lobby of the museum will be in the pavilion where
They'll be there, but they won't have people going in and out of them?
No.
Okay. So why is it necessary, once you go into the Madison Street space, why is it necessary to have people being able to go left or right? Why isn't it on one side that then it would flow through the two buildings?
I'm going to try to articulate this. This is when I wish that Brian was here. You could articulate it better.
Well, I can maybe ask
because if you have to go, because then you have to go one way and you have to turn around and go the other way. I mean, it's like going into a grocery store. Why would you only have to go one way? We have two separate gallery spaces. So going in and having your choice of where you want to start your exploration of the museum makes a lot of sense.
But wouldn't most people want to see all of it?
No, some people are very specific in what they're interested in.
I do like your idea about the automatic doors. I was thinking, how am I going to get, you know, even the automatic button like we have here not particularly.
I know that there's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm about what that will look like.
Okay, and I have other questions that I'll ask at the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Mei Hua Francis Lee. I've been with the Portland Art Museum for member of year about 15 years, and I moved to Portland 20 years ago, and I right away I joined the training and to be a docent, and also I contributed to the Asia Art Council and lots of activity and helping the museum, and because I'm Chinese artist, I paint traditional Chinese works. I teach in the Portland Park Rec Center for many years. Yeah. At the time I joined the museum, we didn't have any training room. It's very small, just one building, and we even have to go to the film studio to do the training. Okay, but now it was 1994. Then we finally expanded. We bought the Mosena Temple became a mock building, and then we can have a contemporary gallery and the photograph gallery and all those modern art display area make the garden, make the Portland Art Museum become much more. And so it is not only just a small city museum and become a state modern museum because we have modern art. Yeah. Now we have a chance to become a national art museum because we're going to add the two buildings together, and we can compete with the other top museum in the United States. And I think it's a very good opportunity for everybody to be able to see how Portland persistent come on to develop in a very international city. And understand that we consider about the walkway, the open courtyard. But like I say, the city growing, we see a lot of display resident and lots of playground and special PSU and student walk around. And we do really hope the museum will revive their design, make everybody accessible, still can cross the street, but with the Roscoe Museum on the top and connect to building. That's why I urge commission and mayor and will understand that our expect for the city become a national city and to have a very famous museum in this United States. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Honorable Mayor, City Commissioners. I'm Shirley Rackner. I'm not going to repeat any of the arguments or points made against changing the walkway. I won't talk about walkability, I won't talk about accessibility, and I won't talk about neighborhood process. I will say someone did mention that this affects just our neighborhood. I live on the fifth floor of the Elliott. I overlook our walkway between Madison, 11th and 10th, and the Art Museum's walkway. And I see people Monday nights, Sunday nights, people going to the theater, people going to the symphony, families walking in the afternoons to go to the movies with their children. So our neighborhood's a really broad neighborhood. And I want to speak about the Art Museum. It is a wonderful gift that belongs to all of us in Portland and has created wonderful and inclusive programs. However, it's very confusing to me, and as I listened today, I became even more confused. How is it that allowing a space of 8 feet by 10 feet in a walkway would hinder any of the museum's program attractiveness or its plans for a new beautiful building? I do hope the City Council will consider carefully what the landscape of Portland downtown will look like in another decade with this legal precedent of creating super blocks throughout downtown Portland. In addition, what will completely ignoring the walkability focus that is enshrined in our comprehensive plan mean for the future of citizen participation? Is it valid and worthwhile process in the eyes of the council, or is it a foolish for Portlanders to participate in planning? By the way, the City Council could invite a group of Portland architects to show how an 8-by-10-foot exterior walkway could happen, and this would be the Portland way. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Colleagues, just a time check. We have about 19 people left, so that's approximately an hour of testimony. Can we hold our quorum?
I'll be here.
All right. Next three, please.
Our Wilfred Mueller Crispin, Stephanie Parrish, and Charles Ryberg. And they'll be followed by Jan Holt, Chris Beck, and Holly Lindauer.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Wilfred Mueller Crispin. I'm in opposition to the proposed amendment to the Portland Art Museum Street Vacation. Reading the Oregonian and the Willamette Week, it appears that the City Council decisions have been made on Pam's request already. A majority of Council members have already expressed their support of Pam's plans to construct the class structure. One can only assume that Council members have been courted by Pam and its PR company. Therefore, I feel very disheartened that my and any testimony opposing the Rothko Pavilion will be received with open minds. I'm here to request that the City not change the current ordinance and give away my right to an unencumbered passage. This is Pam's third request to change the Madison Street Vacation Ordinance. Granting the vacation is inconsistent, like we've heard so many times already, with Portland's 2035 Comprehensive Plan's goals. Requiring pedestrian connectivity to parks and disallowing superblocks, which we also heard so many times already. With the ever-growing population of city center, we need more walkable streets, inviting corridors, certainly not fewer. We can all envision the next step when Pam will request further changes to the ordinance to totally prohibit us from passing through their class structure, their living room with elegant floors, furniture on a rainy, muddy day, with bicycles, prams, umbrellas, etc. Only to obtain an ordinance change is the museum now willing to hire additional security to permit the public to move through the lobby of the pavilion, while it claimed in the past that it could not hire additional security to allow access through the already existing ground-level doors of the Mark building. A simple glass-covered walkway from Pam's existing north entrance to the Mark building door would have provided this access a lot more economically, and it still could. Pam's statements such as "we are listening" and the structure's final architecture will evolve and be determined at a later date are confusing. Early on, Pam definitely told the community that it had considered all the options to us their final and only solution, and that Pam did not desire public input on that matter. Chief Advancement Officer J.S. May to the Downtown Neighborhood Association said, "This is just who we are." Thank you very much.
Thank you,
attention.
Sir. And we have the rest of the testimony here as well. Thank you for submitting it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. A museum should be a two-way street that brings art and public together. These are the words of artist Paul Ramirez Jonas, who spent part of 2013 participating in a program at the Portland Art Museum that asked people from around the city to reflect on the role of art museums in contemporary civic life. For the last 9 years, I have been a member of the museum's education team, where I proudly work with colleagues, artists, and many, many community partners who also care deeply in pushing forward this idea of a museum as a two-way street. And not just that, but a two-way street that meets in a town square and is a gathering place for all kinds of art, people, and ideas. Next week, the Portland Art Museum turns 125, making it one of the oldest art museums in the country. A child of the early 20th century progressive era, the institution's early leaders raised the museum in a civic-minded educational institution that served a broad and general public. From early programs on city planning, free public art classes when there were very few to be found in Portland, deep relationships with Portland public schools, a weekly art radio, a show that broadcast from the galleries, and children's art collection that was installed at Kids Eye View, I'd argue that the DNA of the Portland Art Museum is, well, very Portland, and downright more quirky and diverse than one might think. I also believe its progressive era past very much connects us to the present. When I arrived at the museum, we had just announced funding for free admission for youth 17 and under, along with free school tours. This was a remarkable moment for continuing to move accessibility closer to the center of who we are. And today, I believe we are only getting better at deepening our access through a growing number of programs and collaborations. Programs like Art Now for people living with dementia and their care partners, monthly gallery experiences for people who are blind or partially sighted, community-centered initiatives like Object Stories that share the voices of everyday folks reflecting on the personal meanings of objects, and the current exhibition, We Construct Marvels, which an entire floor has been given over to artist-driven and community-based projects. So I really believe that a driving question we ask ourselves is, what does Portland want and need from its hometown art museum today that is both similar and perhaps radically different from the past? I would suggest that it is not just a museum of collections, but a collective museum. And I think the museum's history of our ongoing accessibility points us in this direction. I hope that the outcome of today's decision is a vote to support this direction too, and a belief that the museum and its many communities can collaborate on a final use and design planning of a Rothko Pavilion, so it is truly a two-way street and a town square for us all.
Thank you. Next three, please.
Was there a Charles Ryberg? Then we'll go ahead and go with Jan Holt, Chris Beck, and Holly Lindauer. And they'll be followed by Deanna Mueller Crispin, Alice Lloyd, and Doug Klotz.
Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm Holly Lindauer. I started my first ever petition this weekend. I'm very excited. It went online, and we also had paper. Since this weekend, we are close to 500 signatures from concerned local neighbors and residents from all over the city, business owners, people from high-rises, affordable housing units, all of these residents who do not want to lose this easement. I'm a Portland resident. My 20-plus year architectural career included working for Skidmore, Owings & Merrill in New York and working with Dewani Platter Zyberg Urban Planners, who have advised Portland on new pedestrianism and urbanism. I learned from them that the appeal of any city is in its public spaces, not in its private spaces. In 1968, the City Council understood this and provided accessible, comfortable, carefree passage on carefree on the vacated public Madison Street. The ordinance inspired mixed-use neighborhood, and for decades, Madison Plaza has been a successful living room, open to all 24/7, because neighborhood life is 24/7. Understandably, the Portland Art Museum needs to expand, but the proposed enclosure of Madison Plaza creates a private living room, open 7 to 11. Providing a guarded passageway for what is typically 1,500 pedestrians, bicycle riders, dog walkers every day of the year up a ramp through humidity-controlled airlock doors, past the ticketing counter, through a store, and through the other set of airlock doors, diminishes the public's accessibility. It's costly. It's not sustainable. Alternatively, the museum can incorporate door-free passage for the public as prescribed by the easement. The result will benefit both the museum and our city's vitality. Please recognize what the City Council of 1968 understood. The museum can accomplish its goals without changing the ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Janet Holt. I've been a docent since 1965 at the Portland Art Museum. The Portland Art Museum offers viewers the opportunity to learn more about our fellow human beings from centuries ago to the present. Viewers may be children, high school, college students, adults. I have led tours for children and also for adults with disabilities. It is very important to them to be able to see what they want to see. However, it can be challenging to go from the Belushki building to the Mark building, not to mention time-consuming. Part of the museum's goal is to have guests enthusiastic about the viewing experience rather than frustrated as to how to get from here to there. Yes, there are maps to help. Still, the goals are to keep things simple, have more exhibition space, and to keep up with the times. It makes sense not to have a pedestrian pathway between 10th Avenue and the park blocks. Why? Would it make sense to have such a path severing the Metropolitan Museum, the Louvre, the De Young, or the Legion of Honor? No way. Huge numbers of people, something like 50,000 last month alone and 200,000 to 300,000 a year, visit the museum compared to the few in the neighborhood who want to keep the pathway. When we look at art, our imaginations are often stimulated. The design for connecting the two buildings is appealing to our imaginations as well as a magnificent upgrade to Portland's cultural district.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Beck, Portland resident and art museum member. What a tremendous opportunity involving one of Portland's iconic intersections and one of our city's most important civic institutions. I bring a perspective. Until last year, I was working for the Obama administration in Washington, D.C. on community development issues. One of the hats I wore got me involved with a consortium of national foundations that were supporting projects around the country around something they call creative placemaking, which is an effort to connect community development issues with arts and artists and arts approaches so that the arts was not isolated from community development and vice versa. Through that effort, I became familiar with this whole practice of creative placemaking. And again, this was supported by some of the largest funders in the country of philanthropies. I think it would be interesting for you to think about how you might encourage the community and the museum and other interests to employ some community engagement work with this increasingly recognized community development approach that's not just the architect and the institution and politicians and a few planners, but the whole community.
Yeah, that's
this,
right.
This space merits that. I think you have the opportunity to lead a conversation about this space that results in something that is perhaps better than what is on the table today. But I think all the objectives the museum wants to pursue are important. It's a space that doesn't work really well yet, and it could be a lot better.
Since the last hearing, I don't think that has really happened. We're not really all that much of a change in the proposal since last time, and there doesn't seem to have been that coming together of, I mean, the three of you have very different and helpful opinions on it. So that I appreciate your statement, because I'm not sure this would have been the time, because once the decision is made, unless it's to go back to the drawing board again, it's going to be with the architects and the planners.
I don't have a dog in the fight. I haven't followed this that closely. Yeah. It's one of my important, my favorite places in the city is Teddy Roosevelt and Lincoln and the church and the museum and Belusky. It's a great spot. And that walkway should have some access. There's lots of ways to do it, probably lots of ways none of us have thought about. If you've been to the British Museum in London in 2000, they built the dome over the core of the British Museum, which had been closed forever, and that opened the heart of the British Museum to the public. It's, I think, they have free admission or used to.
We still do.
But it's transformed the visitor experience, the museum. It's also created a wonderful space the public can enjoy. I don't know if you can bring dogs in there, but I'm all for dogs and bikes, by the way. In whatever comes, I'll vote for that.
It's nice to see you back in Portland.
Sorry, but thank you. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks for your testimony. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you. Next three are Deanna Mueller Crispin, Alice Lloyd, and Doug Klotz. And they'll be followed by Izzy Armenta, Randy Craig, and Ian Gillingham.
And again, if anybody prefer to come downstairs, I think we have seats for everybody if you'd like to do that. But you're certainly welcome to stay there, too. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. I'm Deanna Mueller Crispin. I am a longtime member of the museum and also a user since 1990 of the Madison Passageway from downtown, and have long supported increasing accessibility between and within PAM's buildings. But the Rothko Pavilion proposal is not the best and certainly not the only way to increase people with disabilities or general accessibility to the museum. Here's why. First, from the drawings that we have so far, the proposed new handicap ramped entrance would be much steeper and more difficult to navigate than the existing one to enter the museum or just to pass through as folks can today. Second, both the proposed two new banks of sorely needed elevators and the two new sets of staircases are inside the existing buildings. They would have nothing to do with the new glass pavilion, per se. On the other hand, a sky bridge option on the top floors would allow clear passageways between the two buildings, preserve an iconic view, and leave the pedestrian easement free and clear for the hundreds of neighbors who now use it every day. PAM's claim that the pavilion knits the campus together with the surrounding neighborhood could not be further from the truth. It would create a huge permanent barrier, both physical and psychological, between South Park blocks and 10th 11th Street streetcar stops. This violates several connectivity policies in the newly adopted plan. The right for the public to use the vacated Madison Avenue passageway belongs to the public. PAM's only claim to use it at all is by complying with the terms of their street vacation ordinances, including keeping an open mall. Many neighborhood residents use the passageway outside of PAM's proposed open hours, walking home from late movies, leaving early in the morning to get to work or go to the airport. The passageway, in my experience, as opposed to an earlier speaker, is clean, well-illuminated, and safe, and has few, if any, loiterers. None of this can be said for the alternative routes. And I just have one more thing to say, if I might, for a second. I find it a little ironic that this is being called the Rothko Pavilion. First of all, the Rothko paintings will not be in the glass pavilion at all. In the museum's info, it says, the Rothkos will be in a light-controlled gallery adjacent to the new Rothko Pavilion, in addition to which they will only be there for 20 years. That is the only time that they will be loaned to the museum.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hello. My name is Doug Klotz. I am a member of the city's Pedestrian Advisory Committee, have been for several decades, and but I'm not speaking for them. I do want to point out, though, that the combined meeting of the Pedestrian Advisory Committee and the Bicycle Advisory Committee both sent a letter in April, and they've resent that just yesterday, opposing this change to the ordinance. And these are the committees that the city looks to for advice on pedestrian and bicycle matters. So I oppose removing the allowance for free passage through the street, through the Madison Street Plaza. It seems to me, as was pointed out, the design of the Rothko Pavilion as it is now.
Don't get quite so close to it.
Okay. Yeah, the design as is now could be modified without substantially changing it, since we now know that there's going to be almost no art in it, no elevators in it, and no stairs in it. It's just horizontal passage. So at the ground floor, you take one section of that and have the walls go the other way. Have that be a passageway, and then you'd have a door to the left and a door to the right, and you'd have to be able to enter either one. On the other hand, if you close it, there'll still have to be a guard here and a guard there. So the staffing is the same, and that passageway wouldn't have to be a dark tunnel. It could be a glass passageway, and it would still allow people to see what's in the museum as they pass through, and you know it would be visible from or for security purposes. If this is glass, that's glass. It's all glass. I think this that could work, and I don't see any of the downsides that are described otherwise of not being able to circulate through there. They still have room for a lobby there, and the pedestrian access from the park, from Park Avenue, which they're proposing to add steps, they're not there now because they're raising it 4 feet. So they're adding a bunch of steps and putting a ramp on the side. I think that ramp could be made more generous.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you both. Next, sir, please.
R. Izzy Armenta, Randy Gregg, and Ian Gillingham. And they'll be followed by Laura Paulini, De La Rosa Margulies, and John Zarnecki.
Good afternoon.
I'm Izzy Armenta with Oregon Walks. Oregon Walks is a state pedestrian advocacy organization, and we work to ensure that walking is safe, accessible, and convenient for all Oregonians. I'm here to express our opposition to the motion to amend the public easement that was a condition on the street vacation at the Madison Plaza adjacent to the Portland Art Museum. There were good reasons for the requirement to maintain public access as a condition of the street vacation, and those conditions still exist today. Portland has long had a policy and practice of maintaining pedestrian access when a street is vacated. Out-of-direction travel discourages walking and affects pedestrians more so than other people using other modes of transportation. In the recommended draft of the Portland Central City 2035 Plan, Climate Action Plan, Comprehensive Plan, and Transportation System Plan, and I'm sure I'm forgetting one plan, all include goals to maintain and improve walkability, accessibility, and connections. Council should not ignore its own policies by closing off a key walkway connecting Southwest Park and Southwest 10th. We ask this connection be protected for decades to come. The offer to keep the proposed pavilion open to the public for a few more hours and to improve accessibility is insufficient. The amendment does not prevent the Art Museum from restricting access in the future. And if the amendment were to be approved, any future access changes should be approved by the city. Again, we ask the City Council to deny the Art Museum's request to amend the Madison Plaza street vacation until a building design is available that demonstrates improved access and maintains connectivity rather than creating a new barrier. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Randy Gregg. I have been both a foe and a friend of the museum in my 27 years in Portland. I spent 17 years writing on architecture and urban planning for the Oregonian, one of them dealing with the rather misguided 2005 expansion of the museum into the Masonic Temple, backed with quotes from three of the city's most prominent architects, one of whom, Bob Frasca, actually oversaw the design of the Hoffman Wing, the 1972 edition. I wrote several columns opposing the misguided design of this connection. Sadly, our advice was not heeded. The previous museum administration not only left the museum in millions of dollars in debilitating debt, but with a facility that is entirely dysfunctional. The public spirit of this museum runs very, very deep. In the 1930s, when the first phase was built, museums were windowless vaults. Anna B. Crocker, then director, and architect Pietro Belluschi gave us a museum accessible to the street, permeable with windows and natural light. Crocker created some of the first public education programs in the country. I wish the last edition had fulfilled the spirit of that history, fully addressing 10th Avenue and the streetcar, creating not just a functional connection, but a beautiful one between the two buildings. I wish the galleries were not bowling alleys in the new in the Masonic Temple. What I really wish is that there had been a master plan for the entire cultural district with that move. But alas, none of that happened. Brian Fariso came on and took on the formidable task of digging our museum out of multiple messes left behind. And he also gave us our museum back with a robust menu of free days and discounts and rosters of exhibits that devoted to our regional heritage. I think the spirit of the museum is now intact, and to truly function, the museum really needs this connection. The conceptual direction of the design strongly suggests an intent that, if executed well, will not only fix the many problems others here have outlined today, but will also add a unique space and experience to our civic environment, a little winter garden. What's more, the clock is ticking. The list of people willing to write 7- and 8-figure checks for facilities for the public to enjoy is getting shorter with each passing day. Let me just share one little last little thing with you. Louis Kahn described Portland as a Lilliputian city for its itty-bitty blocks. Yes, the 200-foot block is important. It's a really important pattern, but it's also constricting. There's a lot of things we can't do in it. And I don't know that we can actually do a functioning museum without giving up one super block to the city. One block from New York here is not going to destroy the fabric of the city. So I urge you to approve this. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Ian Gillingham. I work at the Portland Art Museum. I work with local and national media, including Randy sometimes, on coverage of the museum, and I also edit the Portal member magazine that you may get in your mailboxes a few times a year. So a big part of my job is outreach to the various communities through media channels to boost awareness of the art and programs and find new ways to welcome people into our museum. And from that perspective, I want to offer my strong support of the Rothko Pavilion and the ordinance modification to enclose a section of the public passage. I don't need to add much to the perspectives you've already heard, but I want to emphasize that this pavilion plan includes important changes to ensure and improve not only access through, but also access to great works of art and creative inspiration, access to curator talks, docent tours, to programs and spaces that invite in members of the community who haven't always felt welcome at this museum. In my 4 years at the museum, I've been proud to see and be part of the progress the museum has made in becoming a more accessible and inclusive institution. And I want to thank you for considering approval of structural improvements that will support that work for the community. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
The next three are Laura Paulini, De La Rosa Margulies, and John Czarnecki. And then the last two will be Jim Winkler and Tim Davis.
Thank you all for your patience.
Would you like to go ahead and start?
Sure.
Please? Thank you.
I'm Laura Paulini. I'm an artist and a member of the Portland Art Museum. Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, thank you for this opportunity to voice my support for the construction of a new pavilion between the existing Portland Art Museum buildings. In addition to making the museum more accessible to all while maintaining and even improving safety in the space, I believe the building of this pavilion will enhance the museum's ability to contribute much-needed positive experiences to the cultural life of Portland, to its citizens, and to its ever-growing number of visitors. Doing whatever we can as a city to make the Portland Art Museum as welcoming and inclusive as possible seems like a very obvious goal. In our case, however, we find ourselves inheritors of a good institution in a wonderful location, but housed in buildings that have been repurposed with mixed results and poor accessibility. With continued community involvement, I believe that the new pavilion could help make the Portland Art Museum a truly great and inclusive institution. As a high school student in the 1970s in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I attended my regular public high school in the mornings, but traveled downtown to a satellite art class at the Milwaukee Art Museum in the afternoons. This program was part of an effort to mix and integrate students throughout the city and included more than a dozen area public high schools. We spent hours drawing in the galleries, studying the collection, and getting a behind-the-scenes take on the running of the institution. I felt welcomed, challenged, and understood there in ways that I didn't at my regular high school, where sports took precedence over art. The generosity of the museum staff was remarkable, and their interest in our futures opened our eyes to the possibility of careers in the arts. With their encouragement and guidance, I became the first in my family to go to college, earning both a BFA and an MFA in visual arts. Forgive me. Knowing the impact that a strong, vibrant art museum had on me as a young person, I humbly ask all of you to consider doing everything you can to support the Portland Art Museum as it attempts to grow and stay relevant and engaged. Allowing our museum to become the best institution it can be by enhancing accessibility for all is quite simply our obligation. There are many people from all walks of life and all levels of income who are nourished and enriched by encounters with art. A great city needs a great museum. I encourage you all to support the Pavilion Project.
Thank
you. Sorry for the emotion.
Oh, no, that's great.
Sharing, I appreciate it.
There's a lot of passion behind that. Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you for your patience. Sure. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name's Christine Nelson, and I've been a docent at the museum for 16 years, and I'm here to give you some reasons why I strongly support the Rothko Pavilion. As a docent, I lead tours for adults and for children. I also participate in tours for people with no or low vision. And I also had an aging parent who liked to come to the museum in the last years of her life but had issues with mobility and dementia. So I've learned quite a bit about how to look at things through somebody else's eyes. And these are some things that we will get with the Rothko Pavilion that I feel very strongly that we need. One are easily accessible restrooms on the main floor. And although the museum has eliminated the need for a key to get into the restroom on the two individual bathrooms on the main floor, that's just a patch on the problem. Everyone needs to go to the bathroom, and sometimes people need it more urgently than others. Currently, you have to wriggle through our small and very popular gift shop to get to the two individual bathrooms. And once there, you don't have immediate access if somebody else is using them. So either situation can, what I say, dampen your enthusiasm for being in the museum. Now pause to consider what that's like if you're blind, if you're using a walker, or if you're in a wheelchair, or if you're a parent with small children who desperately need to use the restroom. It's a very fundamental issue, but it's humiliating for people just to have to beg to find the restroom and then not be able to use it when they need to. As for the CMCA, people are astounded there are no restrooms on the four floors in the CMCA. There's also no place to sit. One docent came across as what she described as a small, elderly, tired couple sitting on the Saul LeWitt cube, which was on display. She did not have the heart to tell them they should not have been sitting on that piece of art. She didn't have the heart to tell them to get up because it's very tiring to walk through four floors, which are cement floors, and not sit down once in a while. Yet the access I'm not going to talk about because Brian has talked about that a lot, but it's a real maze to get there. Even those of us who love contemporary art and have a spare 20 minutes in the museum, when you're in the Belewski building, we just think it's too much effort to go over there if I'm going to the third or fourth floor. But if with this proposal, the Rothko Pavilion would dramatically improve all of that. The final thing on accessibility is with school tours. Currently, we deploy school tours from the Hoffman Gallery. And schools come, and sometimes they're bringing up to 60 students in each tour, and sometimes there are multiple schools coming at 9:30, multiple schools coming at 10, multiple schools coming at 10:30. If you're going to go into the CMCA, you have to snake all those kids through the Belewski building, whereas if you have a double entry, you can deploy them directly into that building, and you don't have to waste their time traveling up slow elevators and across and down staircases.
I just want to interrupt and say
it rains in Portland, and we all know it. And with this pavilion, people would have a very welcoming place to wait, either before the museum opens or while they're standing in some of the long lines that we're seeing now with the Leica exhibit and the Wyeth exhibition.
Years ago, I volunteered on Saturdays at the museum, and the atmosphere there was akin to a cathedral. It was hushed and very reverent. And during the course of the afternoon, when I was kind of used to be an augmented security staff member, I would be sent to a gallery or two. And sometimes I would see three or four people, and that was it for the afternoon. The museum now is a totally different place. It's dynamic, it's vibrant, it's diverse. And this is a result of the museum's commitment to diverse programmings which welcome many different groups, including those who have visual or physical disabilities, veterans, people who have dementia, people from the LGBTQIA+ community, and many, many other people. With the Roscoe Pavilion, we could much better serve that